built on the rock, children of the Heavenly Father, on my heart imprint your image, rejoice, rejoice, believers, and so much more. Hi, this is Pastor Will Wheaton inviting you to join us for our hymn sing at the 2020 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. This year's theme, Northern Lights, Danish and Scandinavian Hymns. Making the Case is Friday, June 12th and Saturday, June 13th at Concordia University, Chicago. Find out more and register at issuesetc.org.
That is why I'm also calling upon members of Congress here tonight to pass legislation finally banning the late-term abortion of babies.
The sex revolution has been irrational from the beginning, and the evidence against it is piling up. And so there's more and more stuff that they have to just obliterate or wipe out or cover up.
God is speaking to every one of us, but he's not speaking to you in your heart. He's not speaking to you in the winds of the rocks or the trees or through somebody who claims to be a prophet. He's speaking to you in the Word of God.
Do this means do this. It's not that tough. Here's some bread. Eat it. It's me. Here's some wine. Eat it. It's me.
Students at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, love listening to Issues Etc. and doing our catechism recitations on our drives to and from our fieldwork congregations every week.
I imagine that if some alien race were to visit our planet and just tap into our communications, especially here in the United States, look down upon us and try and figure us out, what makes us tick, they would probably conclude that we are obsessed with sex. And not in the way that we have been obsessed with sex traditionally throughout most of our history. This is a new thing. Everything is sex. Politics is sex. Religion is sex. Every interaction is sex. And it's because sex has been cut out, or as our guest in this hour will say, untethered from the body and from the family. It's taken over everything because it's been taken out of its rightful place. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. on this Friday afternoon, February the 14th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We'll begin today's show talking with Dr. Jean Edward Veith about a post-Christian view of the body. Then we'll get a biography of Philip Melanchthon from Dr. Ken Sherb. The church remembers 16th century reformer Philip Melanchthon on the 16th of February. Joining us for part three of our series on a Lutheran response to post-Christian culture today, the body, Dr. Jean Edward Veith, provost and professor of literature emeritus at Patrick Henry College, previously served as culture editor for World Magazine. He's director of the Cranach Institute at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and author of numerous books, including his latest, Post-Christian, A Guide to Contemporary Thought and Culture. Dr. Veith, welcome back.
Good to be with you.
What is the relationship between sex and our creatureliness or our createdness?
Well, Wendell Berry, I think, said it best. He said, sexual love is the force that in our bodily life connects us most intimately to the creation. And you see how that's true. It has to do with our physical body, our createdness, or as physical things. It ties us to the animal kingdom and our instincts and our desires. It's a realm of physical, our senses and pleasures. But it also, even deeper than that, it's the way we join in creation. In sexuality, we engender new life, or rather God creates new life through fathers and mothers, and that one flesh union that he designed is sexuality. And so we're actually participating in creation when that happens. And not only that, sexuality creates the family, and the family creates culture, and the culture creates civilization. So in a way, everything that makes us as human, and that makes us, and all of our createdness really comes together with human sexuality, which is why when it goes wrong, then as now, everything else is messed up.
If sex has been, as you say, untethered from the body and the family, why hasn't our occupation with sex diminished?
Well, I think sexuality is designed to be fulfilled in marriage and the family, but we've disassociated sex from the family. If you would see, you know, watch movies or TV or listen to the music or our pop culture, you'd never have an idea that sex had anything to do with creating children, except maybe as an unfortunate side effect to be dealt with, you know, contraception or even worse, abortion. And so once it's outside of the family, people still have these desires for sexual pleasure and these drives. And so it instead of finding fulfillment where it's supposed to be, people look to all these other areas for it and try to find all these counterfeits. And it becomes something very, very different from how it was created to be. And it can easily turn into a monster. But sex itself, a union of one flesh between a man and a woman that can create life and in the context of marriage, that is the reality of sex. And all these other things that people are looking to are pale substitutes.
A frequent guest on the program, Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse, who's written extensively about the sexual revolution, mm-hmm. has observed that sexuality has been profoundly politicized. And she's right, of course. But I want to ask, is it that sexuality has been politicized or that, following along your line of thinking there, since everything gets sexualized, politics has been sexualized?
Well, I think it has. I mean, it's been said that liberals used to be concerned with, you know, the working man and economic justice issues and all of the rest of that. Now so much is crusading for gay rights, same-sex marriage, and biggest of all now, women's productive health. In other words, the right to have an abortion. And that's become a preoccupation and is at the root of so many of the political platforms of so many of the candidates. And I think politics itself has become less a matter of, you know, how should we govern ourselves? How should we live in a society? You know, but because we've questioned the very roots of that society, now it's taking all these other forms and taking all these other preoccupations and it's turning it into something very different.
Then how did the meaning of sex shift? You say it's been shifted. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think the biggest issue and what's happened is that sex has been separated from conceiving children in the minds and imagination and the thinking of people today. It started, I would say, in 1960 with the invention of the birth control pill, which made a technological solution which separated sex from marriage. Now, I don't have to go all the way with the Catholics on this, but there were Catholic writers who predicted exactly what would happen. You separate sex from conception, it's going to create all kinds of consequences. And it has. So if sex is not intrinsically related to conception, why should you just have sex within marriage? Because now you can have sex without that. And so extramarital sex became common. Why should it be limited to people of different sexes? Why shouldn't a man have sex with a man and a woman have sex with a woman? Because engendering children has nothing to do with sex in people's minds. And so step by step by step, and it keeps going beyond that. You know, now, if sex is just a physical spasm that gives you pleasure, why do you need a relationship at all? Why do you need another person at all? And so you have the rise of internet pornography, again, with the help of technology, and people are having sex just by themselves, in effect. And now they're talking about sex robots, where you can have sex, if you want to call it that, with the plastic object. And that's as far away from the biblical meaning of sex, which is supposed to be both a man and a woman and love and relationship and forming family and forming community, forming culture, it's, and having children. It's as far as that as you can possibly be. And it's not even comparable to the design of sex. But people today only think of sex, as far as the meaning goes, in terms of personal desire. Again, everything in the post-Christian world comes down to inwardness, the self, rejection of the objective, physical or natural or created realities. It's all about my inner desire, and those desires have to be filled, but it's only a matter of myself. And that's at the root of a lot of the issues of sex that we're dealing with today.
How did this complete overturn of sexual morality, at least publicly, occur so rapidly?
Well, again, the birth control pill was invented in 1960, which is the beginning of the 60s, when everything seemed to be up in the air and young people rebelled against family and established values and all the rest. And once you separate sex from conception, and people are always so eager to have sex, then the floodgates were open. And it did happen very quickly because people's thinking about sex changed and turned around. And people felt they could have sex without marriage, family, and then in marriages, if people were unhappy with their sexual life in marriage, that was justification for divorce and trying to find somebody new. And there's a whole ethos that happened in the 60s and 70s that kind of swept everything along with it. And by the way, it happened not just among liberals, because conservatives too became obsessed with freedom, you know, rightly so, politically, emphasis on individual rights and human liberty. They got caught up in the sexual revolution also in the name of freedom, whereas the left tended to see it in terms of civil rights or personal rights. But you find kind of across the spectrum, a kind of the sexual revolution did its work. And like a lot of revolutions, it happened very quickly. And maybe the structure wasn't as strong as it should be. The family in the 50s maybe was not as strong and as biblical as it should have been. And so with this new way of thinking about sex, the whole structure just toppled down.
Next up, we're going to talk about something that Dr. Veith has already mentioned, pornography. He says that it is the greatest deviation from God's sexual order. We'll find out why next.
If there was a pill I could give you that would make you immortal, how much would you pay for it?
Pastor Jonathan Fisk, author of The Issues, Etc., Book of the Month, Without Flesh.
Because you see, that's exactly what we have. And it's priceless, but it's also free. So why is it that nobody's coming to our churches to get this immortality? I mean, we can say that it's all their fault, or maybe there's something about it that we've forgotten.
Learn more and purchase Without Flesh at issuesetc.org.
Concordia University Chicago is a distinctive, comprehensive university of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. We're committed to increasing LCMS faculty and staff members. Hi, this is Dr. Russell Dawn, president of Concordia University Chicago. If you're a member of our Lutheran Church Missouri Synod congregation, please consider joining our staff. And if you have a terminal degree, please consider joining our faculty. Send us an email at human.resources@cuchicago.com.
Real Reformation Radio. You're listening to Issues Etc. Do you long for a church where the gospel of the sinner's free justification is front and center, and yet where a robust sacramental life is confessed and lived? Do you long for a church that rejoices in the sacred scriptures as the sole basis for the church's teaching and proclamation, yet values and listens to the witness of the ancient fathers and councils? Welcome to the Lutheran Church. We are what you've been looking for. Find a Christ-centered, cross-focused church near you on the Find the Church page at issuesetc.org.
There are nearly 20 million college students in the United States. 40% will stop going to church during college. 50% will never return. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is seeking to meet this challenge through LCMSU. Why? Because 100% of college students matter to God and to His church. College is tough. You need Jesus. We'll help. LCMSU. Check us out at lcms.org/LCMSU.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about a Christian response to a post-Christian view of the body. Our guest is Dr. Gene Edward Veith. He's director of the Cronach Institute at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Concordia Theological Seminary forms servants in Jesus Christ who teach the faithful, reach the lost, and care for all. Find out more about studying for the vocations of pastor or deaconess at ctsfw.edu or call 1-800-481-2155, Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. Dr. Veith, you say that the greatest deviation from God's sexual order is sex without any relationship at all. You're talking about pornography.
Well, yeah. And that isolated sex. You know, we think now of homosexuality as sort of an expression of contemporary sexuality, where it's come. And that is a big factor, and gay marriage is completely revolutionary. No society has ever had that as such. But really, I think what's even more expressive of the contemporary worldview that I look at in this book, this post-Christian worldview, is that tendency of people today to be isolated. Sometimes it's not their choice. Sometimes it is their choice. Usually it is. And to withdraw into their own virtual reality, their computer world. It looks like a reality. It's not actual flesh and blood reality. And so just as their friends on social media often are not anyone they actually know or have an actual relationship with, but they think of them in that way. It's a virtual community. And so now we have virtual sex where someone can tune in and watch people having sex on in a video. And that's their sexual stimulation, and that's their sexual relief. But again, it's a virtual world, and it's not. I mean, sex is in God's design, gets us outside ourselves, and puts us in relationship with another physical, flesh and blood human being, and creating flesh and blood children, and it orients us to creation. Whereas this brings us back into that virtual rebellion against reality itself. And yet, as long as people get their spasm of pleasure, that's all they have. And that's enough for some people on one level. But it's ultimately very dissatisfying, very frustrating, and very pathetic.
Why is it then, as you say, the greatest deviation from God's sexual order and our createdness?
Well, instead of sex with another human being, it's with someone different than ourselves. God created male and female. He created them in His image. That image includes that male and female in His creation. And so if you reject that reality, and if you reject the relationship and everything that goes with it, which becomes in marriage, you know, making a living, you know, having children, taking care of children, you know, that gets you in a completely different place, doing completely different things, and being in a morally responsible relationship. universe that makes sense and that you're participating in, whereas the virtual sex and the online world has none of that, and it becomes just a parody of it. People would talk about treating people as sex objects, and part of the sexual revolution involves treating other human beings in a very bad way, not in a loving way, but in an abusive way, which we're seeing, and now even the secularists are admitting that sex is and often has been misused to harm people and to exert power over people and to abuse people rather than as a person of love. And so, and ironically, that's causing some people to say, oh, well, I don't want to get into any relationships. I might just commit sexual assault and get sued, and I'll just retreat into my pornographic world. And again, that whole loss of the true sexual ethic that the scriptures give us just leaves something back very twisted and even harmful, and even working opposite to the way God intended it to.
Recently, Nadia Bolz-Weber, she calls herself a public theologian in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, wrote a book about sexual reformation. And in conjunction with the release of her book, by way of kind of garnering some publicity, she was talking a lot on social media about ethical pornography, that she thought it could be done in a way that was ethical and consensual and therefore would pass muster for her as something that was non-exploitive. Does it surprise you that the denizens of the sexual revolution are, at least in that limited sense today, embracing pornography?
Well, it doesn't surprise me. It's very symptomatic, I think, of a lot of the thought that's in the air, you know, the implications of it. It's interesting that she would say that it's consensual. What the secularists are doing in terms of ethics, again, as I've said, what makes something right or wrong is the will, not the intellect, not knowing about a transcendent, absolute law of God, but it's the will. And so if a woman chooses to have an abortion, that's right for her. She chooses to have a baby, that's right for her. And so in trying to deal with sexual issues, and by the way, the weaknesses of the sexual revolution are kind of coming out because people were say, well, sex was no big deal. That's what you're saying in the 60s and 70s. And if a woman didn't want to have sex with a man, she had hang-ups, and you know, she should learn to get beyond them. But now it's a Me Too movement, to its credit. I think this is a very healthy thing. We see women recognizing how they had been abused and used sexually. And so how do you deal with that? They don't want to have sexual morality, which is the solution to it. Don't have sex with anyone you're not married to. And so they're trying to apply the ethic of consent. So it's the will. If the woman chooses, and so there's consent, then it's all right, no matter what the context is. But the problem of that is that that's a very weak thing to stand on. Consent is important in sexual morality, and it always has been. But if that's the only one, it becomes very hard to determine. And so, you know, when the big Hollywood producer is coercing a woman, saying, you have sex with me and I'll put you in my new movie, he's coercing her, but she's consenting in a way, sort of. And so that consent, is that justified? I think most people would say that it doesn't. But how you could have consensual pornography, you know, are the people on the video, are they consenting to how you're using them? But I mean, that's not even the point. Of course, they're doing it for money, just like prostitution, and I suppose that's consensual. And there are movements that want to legalize prostitution and other sex work, as they describe it. But that doesn't make it ethical. Only if you take that very unstable position that anything you consent to is fine, that doesn't make it any different. And there was another article recently, and I forget whether it's Atlantic or Vox or something, one of the liberal mainstream publications, talking about young people's sexual attitudes because they're mostly formed today by pornography. And so young men are developing terrible attitudes towards women, including abusive attitudes towards women, that they're getting from the pornographic world. Because if it's just about you and another person is not really involved, then it can cultivate that attitude. And even this publication was seeing how terrible that is.
Can creation be suppressed, as the sexual revolution has attempted to do, indefinitely?
I don't think so. Again, you can deny reality. That is, you can deny creation for a while. But I don't think you can indefinitely. Eventually, reality reasserts itself. Eventually, creation reasserts itself. And we're seeing, even among the millennials who have a very low marriage rate, they want to be married. Even among women and men who do not have children and are not interested in children, seemingly you see at some point a desire to have children. And that's because we are created as human beings, created in the image of God, however much we've driven that image out. These wholesome desires manifest themselves. Now they get kind of displaced into other areas. And sometimes it doesn't, sometimes those are very distorted too. But like I said, there's a reality about sex that it is a very big deal. One of the biggest deals in our created existence. And so in this, what we've made of it, it's not working. Again, the Me Too movement shows that we do need sexual morality. Sex isn't something we can just have at random, anything we want, because it is a moral issue. And so now people in the Me Too movement, they're talking about it kind of in feminist terms or in postmodern terms, consensual terms. But it's a recognition that we have to have some moral principles regarding sexuality. And so I think that we'll find that the sexual revolution is going to fizzle out, and that there will be a counter-revolution that maybe will help put us on a better track.
After the break, we'll talk about how technology has affected our bodies. It's part three of our series on a Lutheran response to post-Christian culture. We're talking about the body today. Dr. Gene Edward-Veith is our guest, author of numerous books, including his latest, Post-Christian, A Guide to Contemporary Thought and Culture.
This week on The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, we'll study Jesus' praise for the preservation of his disciples, Jesus' praise for future believers, Jesus is arrested, Peter's first denial, and Jesus delivered to Pilate. Join me, Pastor Will Wheaton, as we continue our walk through St. John's Gospel on The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, your daily verse-by-verse Bible study on demand at thewordendures.org and on the Lutheran Public Radio app.
Hi, this is Pastor Brian Katchelmeyer of Redeemer Lutheran Church in Los Alamos, New Mexico. Over the next 5 years, Los Alamos National Laboratory is planning to hire thousands of new employees in the areas of science, engineering, security, administration, and construction. If you have both a technical and confessional mind, Los Alamos may be the place for you. I invite you to explore the possibilities on the websites for the Town, Laboratory, and Redeemer Lutheran Church.
I believe in one God, the Father Almighty, maker of heaven and earth, and in Jesus Christ, his only Son, our Lord, who was conceived by the Holy Spirit. Ad Crucem has crafted a series of posters to put what we believe, teach, and confess on display. See our Luther's Daily Prayers, the Apostles' Creed, Nicene Creed, Liturgical Calendar, John 1 in Latin, and coming soon, the Athanasian Creed. Visit adcrucem.com. That's adcrucem.com.
The Simply Classical curriculum for special needs moves at my child's pace and gives her exactly what she needs. So writes Amber, a homeschooling mother who has joined thousands in homes and schools teaching from this uniquely Christian classical approach to special education. Teach students with autism, learning disabilities, or Down syndrome based on ability level rather than chronological age. Use promo code LPR20 today at classicalspecialneeds.com. Classicalspecialneeds.com.
Education and edification. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by becoming an Issues Etc. congregational sponsor: Bethany Lutheran, Naperville, Illinois; Emmanuel Lutheran, Dearborn, Michigan; Grace Lutheran, McPherson, Kansas; Emmanuel Lutheran, Hamilton, Ohio; Mount Calvary Lutheran, Excelsior Springs, Missouri; Peace Lutheran, Filer, Idaho; Redford Lutheran, Redford, Michigan; St. John Lutheran, Schaumburg, Illinois; St. Paul Lutheran, Unionville, Michigan; and Trinity Lutheran, Valonia, Indiana. Find out how your confessional Lutheran church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to issuesetc.org, click Support, Donate, and print the one-page flyer. When your congregation becomes an Issues Etc. sponsor, we'll publicize your church on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. Welcome back. This is Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin on this Friday, February the 14th. It's part three of our series on a Lutheran response to post-Christian culture. We're talking about the body with Dr. Gene Edward Veith. Dr. Veith, how has technology affected our bodies?
Well, again, technology is the use of tools to overcome our limitations as human beings. So certainly technology has helped our bodies, and the medical technology has made us healthier and help us to overcome diseases and live longer and happier lives. Technology keeps us warm in the winter and cool in the summer, and lets us take our bodies transporting all around the world. And so technology is such a blessing, and that's part of God's design for human beings too. But again, the way we're misusing just about everything, we're seeing this trust in technology that's becoming quite idolatrous. I mean, not only are we using technology for sex instead of a human being in the case of pornography, and using it for virtual relationships instead of actual relationships, there's a movement called the transhumanist, who look for a union of the human, of human beings with machines. That they believe that what we're evolving to the point where human beings can overcome their human limitations by merging with machines. And whether that's downloading your brain into the internet so you will have access to all the knowledge and experiences in the world, and you can leave your body, which is just a meat computer, that's how some of them describe it, your brain is a meat computer. You won't even need that. Your consciousness will be in the internet and thus unlimited. Or talking about achieving super strength by replacing the muscles with metallic machinery that will let us be stronger and more powerful. There's a whole ideology of that, of wanting to turn human beings into machines. And in that mindset, again, a machine is better than being human. And so that trust in the machine, that idolizing of the machine, is kind of a testimony to the lack of respect ordinary human life. And so technology becomes, you know, something else that we can look to solve our problems. Again, Luther said in the Large Catechism, explanation of the first commandment, you should have no other God before me. What does it mean to have a God? Well, whatever you have faith in, that's your God. Whatever you trust, that's your God. And so today, technology is the God. That's what people trust and look to for every good. But again, technology is something human beings make, and it has its limits, as we keep seeing. And until we find the proper place for it, we're missing out even on what technology can do for us.
How did transgenderism go from a technological pursuit, that is, I just want to be surgically altered to be as close as I can to the opposite sex, to a full-blown, if not consistent, ideology?
Yeah, well, in a way, transgenderism is sort of the ultimate case of constructivism. We talked about that before, the view that people, that we create our own truths, that we create our own reality, that by an action of the will, we form what's real for us. And back before, when I wrote my first book, Postmodern Times, people were talking about constructing ideas, constructing truths, constructing beliefs. But now, then so many other things, that has been taken to such an extreme that now we're seeing people who, by their will, believe they can choose their identity and choose what sex they are. The body, that doesn't make any difference because they're rejecting physical reality and creation and objective facts and objective truth. And again, for a while it was, well, I can construct my body any way I want, so I can get a surgery. I want to be a woman, so I can get a surgery to sort of mimic that in some ways. Now, though, you don't even have to have a surgery. Now, your only thing is what you profess, what you identify as. And so you can choose to be a man. A woman can choose to be a man, and or a man can choose to be a woman. And society is supposed to recognize that and acknowledge that and legally consider that person of that sex. And that is the ultimate, like, repudiation of the physical, of the body, turning all into my inner choice. Now we have the gender fluid movement, which is even beyond that, in which sometimes a person identifies as a woman, and sometimes she identifies as a man, and another time she identifies as a woman again. And so where it's not even, people don't want to be restricted in any way, and they don't want to have any external definitions of themselves other than the ones they affirm for themselves. And so even transgenderism is developing another stage where there's no such thing as a man, no such thing as a woman, and it's a construction of the self.
Is transgender ideology, you did say it was a manifestation of constructivism, but let's talk about its internal inconsistencies. Because it insists that gender, on one hand, that gender is fluid or a social construct, or even, as you said, a mental construct. And yet its desire is to play into that binary, the biological binary. It's entirely based upon shifting from one to the other, that they say neither one truly exists.
Well, yeah, and in a way, I think, see transgenderism as a symptom of the collapse of so many of the movements that we've had. In my book, I argue that there are all these trains of thought, but they're devouring themselves. They're all running into self-contradictions, into dead ends. And so, for example, the feminist movement, which is so influential and had such a big effect. Now, with transgenderism, what is a woman? Men can be women. Men are entering female sports, and in some cases in boxing or martial arts, males who identify as women get to compete as women and beat other women up to a bloody pulp. And there's nothing anyone can say about that. And so women now, those who identify as men, can give birth to children. Okay, because they're biologically female, but identify as men. So men can get pregnant, and men can have children. It's also throwing off homosexuality. There are cases where a biological man identifies as a woman. Now, as a man, he still has sexual desires for women. So when he identifies as a female, he identifies as a lesbian. And so he's a woman who has sex with women, but he's actually a man who's having sex with women in the typical way. But what happens to any of those categories? They all become meaningless. Male, female, gay, straight, lesbian. Does a man desire another man because he's gay or because he actually a woman born in the wrong body? Look, in all of these things which you know we associate together, it's actually symptoms of collapse, of mental failure, and of the failure of those ideologies, and yet they have no way of really going beyond that.
We're discussing a post-Christian view of the body with Dr. Gene Edward Veith. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues, Etc. Thanks to Lutheran Church Extension Fund, childcare is free for ages 1 through 12 at this year's Making the Case Conference. The premier conference for Christian laity is Friday, June 12th and Saturday, June 13th at Concordia University, Chicago. It's an opportunity for you to meet and hear Mark and Molly Hemingway, Drs. Albert Moeller and Robert George, and Pastors Will Whedon, Brian Wolfmiller, and Hans Feeney. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org. The 2020 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 12th and 13th in Chicago. We're going to answer the question about constructivist sexual ideology and its language next.
Faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the word of Christ, teaches St. Paul. But what about those who cannot hear? Can they be saved? The February issue of the Lutheran Witness illuminates this topic and others, including hearing the gospel while singing the faith, how to listen to sermons, and proclaiming the gospel in foreign lands. Come, learn how the Church confesses the word in words. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran perspective. cph.org/witness.
Did you know that many LCMS military personnel and their families are unable to receive word and sacrament ministry due to the lack of LCMS chaplains? Ministry to the Armed Forces is looking for pastors who will answer the call to serve as a chaplain to provide word and sacrament ministry to the men and women who selflessly serve our nation. Find out more about this exciting ministry by contacting me, Chaplain Craig Mueller, at lcmschaps@lcms.org. That is lcmschaps@lcms.org.
Old theology, new technology. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
There are so many issues throughout all levels of government that smart Christians need to view it as a way to care for our neighbor by making good decisions.
Molly Hemingway talking about her joint presentation with her husband Mark at the 2020 Issues, Etc. Making the Case Conference.
The federal government has gotten much more involved in family formation or family destruction, abortion, other issues. And there are so many ways in which it's important for us to think about how we can defend the weak and vulnerable among us by making good decisions.
You can meet and hear journalist Molly and Mark Hemingway making the case for Christian political engagement at this year's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. The premier conference for Christian laity is Friday, June 12th and Saturday, June 13th in Chicago. Attendance is limited to 500. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org or by giving us a call 618-223-8385. Welcome back. We're talking with Dr. Gene Edward Veith, author of the book Post-Christian, A Guide to Contemporary Thought and Culture about the Body in a Post-Christian Culture. Dr. Veith, there's a lot of new language, a new syllabus that the constructivist sexual ideology is trying to foist upon us. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, they say now in the correct circles, when you introduce yourself, you should always say what your preferred pronoun is. Do you want to be referred to as a he or a she or they, if you don't want to be considered male or female as such, if you're gender neutral, and they're trying to make up new pronouns for the different variations. They, them, near, nears, themselves, the, their, this. And you can't just make up new pronouns. The language doesn't work that way. But in the workplace and a lot of policies, and in fact, I believe in Canada and some other jurisdictions, calling somebody by the wrong pronoun can actually be against the law. And so you have the language involves a certain kind of fidelity to the created order. And so people are having to try to redo language in their attempt to overcome that. But there are just so many genders now. The thing is not just male or female, but they're constructing and identifying with other genders. On the internet, you can find a whole list of different gender identities. You know, you have LGBT, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, then Q is queer, questioning, intersex, curious, asexual, agender, pansexual, polysexual, two-spirit, and then some are even going further. I have a whole list in that book. Aerogender, the gender that's influenced by your surroundings. Affectogender, a gender that is affected by mood swings. Agender, the feeling of no gender, the absence of gender. Gender punk, a gender identity that actively resists gender norms. Hydrogender, a gender which shares qualities with water. Mirror gender, a gender that changes to fit people around you. And it goes on and on and on and on. But I mean, the very impossibility of and the absurdity of these different gender descriptions is evidence that they do not reflect reality, they do not reflect creation, but they're completely made up, and then people are expected to behave to people who with these kind of gender claims, and it's impossible to do that.
I'm curious as to your perspective on this as a career devotee to the English language. Teaching English and studying the English literature, especially what you mentioned there a few moments ago, the sheer and hubris of just making up a pronoun.
Well, in terms of literature, I look at it as comical, as literature would make fun of things by exaggerating, and satire is that way. Now, the reality goes beyond the satire. It's almost self-satirizing. There's no way you can exaggerate it because they're exaggerating it so much themselves. And most people in reality, even the people who assert these identities, most of them talk normally when they're by themselves, when they relax, when they're not trying to put on a show or make a statement. The language they use and the language they think in operates on its own. You can't change it and affect it to fit your particular ideology. Again, that's the way of madness, that level of rejecting reality, but also rejecting mind, rejecting reason, rejecting communication, rejecting language. And so it's all just sort of dissolves. So as a English professor, these extreme cases are the rejection of the English language. They're not even, or of any language. And so they're trying to do really without it and to make up their own. And see, people want to construct their own realities. You cannot construct your own language, because language involves another person understanding you. And so language is something that you have to share and that is important in relationships and in communities and the outside world. But if you're going to be so solipsistic, going inside yourself, as almost all of these drains do, it's ultimately a rejection of language. And a lot of these people, they say that. They say, well, language doesn't really have any meaning. Language is just a social construction, so we can construct it to mean anything we want. Well, no, it doesn't work that way. Language does have meaning. That's what makes a language. And it's a meaning outside yourself, and it's evidence that you cannot just create everything for yourself.
There is a certain irony in someone asserting that language has no meaning. And the only way they make that assertion is by the employing language.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
You say that the sexual revolution is unsustainable. Why?
Well, because deep down, we know that sexuality is a big deal and that it has moral meaning and that it finds its fulfillment only in marriage, that it has to do with creating children. And, you know, now, just as you can have sex without having children, you can also have children without having sex. And so that has opened up the whole realm of reproductive engineering, the attempts to breed the perfect baby, sperm donation, egg donation, finding the donors, sort of trying to create your image of the perfect child that you want. And again, it's tainting even that. But people have an instinct. We are physical creatures. We have an instinct and drives. Luther talks about sex is something that God put in us, and we have a drive that will be fulfilled however we distort it. And so, again, people now are realizing that sex has to have a moral dimension. Otherwise, you just have strong men just preying on women, as we have in the Me Too movements and all the scandals that are coming out. And people are rightly repelled by those scandals, whether it's Weinstein or having the Catholic Church or the Baptist Church and other places. People are just repelled at these abuses. And that shows that people have a moral sensibility, however much they may want to deny it. They know that sex has a moral dimension and has to be respected as such. The problem is they don't have anything to put in its place, because they've rejected moral absolutes and rejected God's law. They can't really deal with it very well, but at least they recognize that there's some moral truth, even despite what they often maybe say. Again, we have to reproduce ourselves. We have to have children. And the birth rate has gone way down, but still that necessity asserts itself. And at some points in people's lives, they feel that very strongly. And it's manifest in different ways, you know, with pets and with people consider their dogs their children. And, you know, and it can get kind of extreme, but it shows there's something alive in human beings, that it shows the need for having children, and that's a healthy thing. So, again, just the collapse of everything going so wrong, I think that it's going to cause people to want to try to put things together again, and hopefully Christians will be in a position to show them how to do that.
Dr. Gene Edward Veith is Provost and Professor of Literature Emeritus at Patrick Henry College. He previously served as Culture Editor for World Magazine. He's Director of the Cronach Institute at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and author of numerous books, including his latest, Post-Christian, A Guide to Contemporary Thought and Culture. You'll find a link to it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. Next time, Dr. Veith will join us to continue our conversation on the post-Christian culture and the body. We'll take up the subject of the sexual counter-revolution. Dr. Veith, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Good to be with you.
The Church observes Philip Melanchthon on February 16th. We'll find out more about this 16th century reformer from Dr. Ken Sherb after the break. The gift that God has given us in human sexuality is a gift that comes wrapped in a particular way in the biology of male and female and in the institution that God created for male and female called marriage. Now, we can, in our stubborn sinfulness and our rebellion, take that gift and abuse it. We certainly have. Now, up until this point, it might have only come in the form of misdirected affections. But now our society has decided to divorce the gift of sexuality from both biology and marriage. The consequences are dire. But God is still in control and the giver of that good gift. We trust His word. I'm Todd Wilkin. Stay with us.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Wildwood, Missouri is a proud sponsor of Issues Etc. And if you enjoy the relevant, Christ-centered teachings presented on this program, then you should come and join us at St. Paul's on Sundays at 9 a.m., where you will hear sermons that proclaim Jesus Christ and Him crucified for our sins, and enjoy in-depth Bible studies to help us grow as disciples. For more information, check us out at stpaullutheranwildwood.org.
Listen to the best of the Church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7, LutheranPublicRadio.org.